Nordic podcast from nordiskradio.se. My name is Lucas Lindgren, and with me today I have Andreas, Halvdan and Tarje. Hello guys.
Good evening.
Hello.
Greetings.
Today we're going to mostly talk about the article, A Defense Speech for National Socialism by Fredrik Weideland from 2015. But we have one small little news piece we're going to do first. And that's a news piece from Finland. And for those that have listened to the podcast, this is our 20th episode. So for those who have listened throughout the year, probably remember that we talked a bit about Lucia and the Lucia celebrations in Finland and how many, shit they have. And they do the same in Sweden, of course, and probably the other Nordic countries. But they had, like, when they voted for the Lucia in Finland, like last year and so, they had like a public vote, I guess. But yeah. There was a news piece that came out the 5th of May on Yle that you no longer can vote for the Lucia of Finland, and that like a committee is going to choose the Lucia instead, and that's because of injustice and racism.
I don't know how is that supposed to solve anything? People gonna not be racist because a committee is choosing a Lucia? What's the thinking here?
Yeah, they're probably gonna put it on Facebook or something, and the people are going to be as hateful in quotation marks as usual. So yeah, but it just shows that the people want something different. The people don't really want like one of them. More European celebrations to be fronted by an African. That isn't really something that people want. Not even like boomers want that.
It's kind of odd that the people vote for that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of confusing in every direction.
Yeah, absolutely. But they like usually, I remember in school sometimes they took just a guy Lucia, like had a boy instead, just to fuck with the traditions. And so they do stuff like that. And they might have like, they blend pictures, they have like some white people and then just one or two Africans or something. Yeah, and it's just because the Lucia is supposed to be blonde also. And that's why they like to. That's too much for them. They can't handle that.
I thought it was normally redheads, though, they went after. Or it's also the blondes they don't like.
Yeah, in Sweden, it's mostly blondes, like the real blondes. That's the tradition. A redhead would probably do also. But usually it's not like brunettes. Nowadays, it's that's possible, absolutely. But like the view I have of a Lucia, and I know of a lot of other people also have it, and that's that it's supposed to be a blonde. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point, isn't it? It's just like shock factor and...
Yeah.
Like Uno reverse, yeah.
Yeah, it's like ripping up traditions. You're supposed to be bold and new and activistic and yeah.
Neoliberalism. It's neoliberalism and it never ends, right? Like it's like a continuous revolution, right? So there's not going to be any stop to the horribleness, you know, even when you get shocked, like, you know, these Netflix shows and things like that. You know, it's not going to put an end to it. It's going to keep going and going.
So. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, the conservatives make that point. Like, you've gotten everything you wanted. What else can you ask for? And they don't realize, like, the answer is just more, always.
Always more.
But no, it's this, like, Marxist view of revolution, and it only stops with white people being dead.
Yeah, but a bit on that topic as well, because we just had the Eurovision as well. I don't know if this has been talked to death now, but isn't there also a crowd vote and, like, an official panel vote as well? Does anyone know Israel, because they got number two? How did it look, like, the public vote against the official voting? Does anyone know?
No. Actually, I have no idea. I don't really watch.
Yeah, I didn't watch either.
The only thing I know is that they, like, filter out the booze for Israel.
I was hoping Andreas would be a big Eurovision fan, but maybe not.
I see here that the committee that's supposed to choose the Lucia is a committee of 11 people, and it's composed according to regional distribution and diversity.
Yeah, exactly.
But then she also says this Stina Heikkilä, or whatever her name was. By removing the voting element, we still want to make it very clear that we do not approve of any form of inappropriate behavior towards young people. Like, yeah, I thought that was a point.
Yeah, what's not appropriate is, like, pushing non-whites to being like this ammunition towards anti-white actions. That's inappropriate towards them. They should, like, live in Africa and run around chasing animals and climbing trees and so on. I don't know.
Mm. Do they eat any, like, those buns in Andreas in Finland as well? Is that a Nordic thing, or
which buns?
The ones with, like, saffron in them.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Lussebullar.
Yeah, okay.
And then we also have, but we have a much more based, like, the swastika cake.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever seen one, but it's direct translation is like a Christmas star.
Okay. No, I never seen that. And it's with sugar, or it's like plain bun, or
powder sugar with sugar with, like, plum. What's it called? Plum marmalade in the middle.
Okay, that sounds good. Nice.
I can send you a picture in the chat.
Yeah. Well, send me a bun, that'd be better. But I'll do that as well.
I'll mail you one at Christmas time. So.
Yeah, I googled it. It looks really cool, actually.
Yeah, yeah. But is that, like, the talk with now? It's got a swastika on as well. Is there, because I know your Air Force, you know, they had a swastika for a long time, but that was removed, right? I don't know if there's any talk about that one as well, or
I think that was last year that they removed it.
Yeah. Okay.
I've seen live on a military parade that commemorated. Oh, that's another story. But anyway, there was Germans in the parade as well, and they weren't really too happy with it.
Yeah,
okay. They were terrified. Like, if I march under this banner, I'm gonna get put in jail in Germany.
I'm gonna end up in the Soviet Union somehow. And
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's sad because, I mean, I think I'd really hate it because my forefathers and, you know, the people before me, you know, there's this huge culture where we fought under that flag, right? And then they just, yeah, I wouldn't want to be the first one to march under something new, that's for sure. But yeah, that's the times, the dark times.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we can begin with the article. The defense speech for National Socialism, it was originally published in February 2015 on Nordfront, I believe. And I just thought that I could read the introduction. It's just 250 words.
Can we get some background on it?
Yeah, that's the background.
Oh, that's the background. And Vaidelin, because he wasn't the leader back then, was he?
No, he was just, but he has always been one of the the higher ups, at least for 20 years.
Yeah.
So This is the introduction of the article. The Chancellor of Justice wants to criminalize positive expressions about National Socialism. Below is Fredrik Weideland's defense speech for National Socialism, delivered as the closing statement at the Göta Court of Appeal when the case was heard. On Friday, Fredrik Weideland stood accused of incitement to racial hatred at the Göta Court of Appeal in Jönköping. As the legally responsible publisher, Weideland had previously been convicted of incitement to racial hatred for a number of comments and an article. The criminalized expressions included "Long live National Socialism," "Long live Hitler," "Death to SOG," "Smash Zion," and "Adolf Hitler, the greatest folk hero of modern times." The Chancellor of Justice prosecutor Fredrik Ingblad built his case on strawman arguments, interpretive facts, and other rhetorical tricks with which he managed to manipulate the district court. Ingblad gave himself the sole right of interpretation over what National Socialism stands for, aiming to convince the court of unobjective grounds that Nordfront stands for racial hatred, racial persecution, and extermination, simply because we share the same ism as others who are alleged to have stood for this. When the expressions were given a new trial at the Court of Appeal, Weideland chose to deliver a longer speech to explain what National Socialism stands for, but also what Nordfront represents, stands for, and means by the concepts we use. After defense attorney Björn Hurtig and inquisitor Fredrik Ingblad delivered their closing arguments, Fredrik Weideland was allowed to conclude the proceedings. A noticeably irritated Ingblad reacted strongly to Weideland being allowed to give his speech. Ingblad interrupted Weideland's speech because he felt personally attacked, but was then told off by an audience member. Weideland himself, Hurtig, and also the judge. And then his speech is after that. And I counted, and the entire article takes around 30 minutes to read. I believe it's like 5,000-6,000 words. And in Sweden, at least, there exists a printed pamphlet with the speech, where the front page is of Weideland and the last page is of Fredrik Ingblad, the prosecutor. And yeah, this article or this speech is it's long, but it describes National Socialism in a very good way, and it also describes the enemies of National Socialism in a very good way. And
And why they are the enemies.
Exactly.
It was also done in 2015, right? Is that when like Sweden started getting all these hate speech laws and you know,
where
you
not were... really, it began like in the 90s with the skinhead movement.
Okay.
Because I believe like in the it began with Lex Åberg, like an anti-Semitic like man who I believe this is from memory, but I believe like right after the war, like in the 50s and 60s, he ran around and was anti-Semitic. And there were no laws against it, and the Jews didn't like it, and they have just won World War II. So they had they were in like in the means of confirming their control of the world.
Yeah.
So they began with those laws there, but then like through the like 60s, 70s, and 80s, it was pretty like they didn't have to push it further, because Sweden became multicultural on paper in 1975. So before that and around those years, Sweden was like in really good shape, at least compared to today. But like in the 80s and the 90s, the skinhead movement became it started to grow bigger and bigger. Yeah. And then we have the figure Björn Björkqvist, who was one of the guys who, like, was the one who made these hate speech laws pass, like, over new lines every time. So before, like, I believe it was like in the rest of the Nordic countries that the Nazi salute was, the National Socialist salute was okay, and a lot of symbols too. But it was around like the 80s, 90s, they started to ban a lot of symbols and so on.
Okay.
And but then they just kept going. I believe like from 2010 to 20, when like the alt-right wave was really big, and the Nordic Resistance Movement also had like its best years. There they really started to like put in the finishing touches.
Yeah, it's like what we talked about in previous episodes, which is they only, you know, implement laws when they feel like they need to or they're threatened, right? So
yeah, absolutely. And then 2024 they started with the laws against Holocaust denial, and that's just like an add-on to the existing hate speech law. It's not a new law, it's just a little add-on. So yeah,
and because people are freely talking about it on Twitter and things like that, right? So they need to put a hold on it. So
yeah.
Wasn't the motivation there that if you say the Holocaust is fake, which is of course isn't, but then you're saying basically that the Jews are lying and therefore it's hate speech?
Yeah, they have a lot of like shit arguments, like something like that. And also that, yeah, that you like refuse the suffering of Jews because like Jews have to suffer. And if you say to them that everything's all right, it's just if you go against Jews, you're gonna get judicial consequences.
Yeah, of course. It's they start with what they want implemented, and then they just make up some bullshit afterwards. But they can be pretty funny, the reasoning behind the laws.
Did the Court of Appeals change the decision, or did they uphold their previous conviction?
I think he, as I remember it, he got they just go with the previous decision. They just withheld it, so they convicted him. Because still today, it's you're not allowed to say death to SOG. It's not allowed in Sweden, and you can't say long live Hitler. You can't like talk good about Adolf Hitler in like grand terms. You also can't post pictures of Adolf Hitler if you're like National Socialist. But if you're not National Socialist, you can put up as many pictures as you want. There was like one case in Sweden recently when some like old man sat on a public street and painted pictures of Hitler in like aquarelle on the street, and he wasn't a Nazi, but he got to court, but I believe he was freed. But there's a lot of like these things also, like people who have been on like markets for used goods and sell like old SS memorabilia and so on. Those don't really have it that easy and so on. So yeah, but it depends on who you are. If you're a lefty and you post like swastikas and so on, or just liberal, you can do it how much you want. Yeah, but I have like some points from the speech that I want to bring up that I think are interesting. But if anyone has anything they want to bring up before, they can do it.
Yeah, I have one point at least.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe you're gonna mention it as well, but we'll see.
Yeah,
it's horrible how other like Jews and Shabbos goys always get to define what National Socialism is, and it's always presented like a genocidal death cult, which works against us in two ways, because it puts a barrier between us and people who would normally maybe be open to the ideas of National Socialism. And it can also attract the wrong kind of people that believe in the media's picture and want to join for all the wrong reasons to be, maybe that's not a problem as much today, but it was before, at least. Like, who just want to be a Hollywood Nazi and be edgy. So it's a pretty sinister strategy from them.
Yeah,
and actual National Socialists can never define what it is. Not in a public space, anyway.
No, but they have a lot of control over a lot of words, don't they? It's, you know, I'm sure we all agree that racism and you know, anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, all these words, you know, they're the ones who decide what it means. We don't have much to say. So
no,
it's where the power lies, right? Through the media and the images and the ideas and concepts they can put into words and language. So yeah,
the latest offense that they've done is totally equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, which, so what? But it puts like a more serious charge on so-called normal people.
It doesn't work as well as with National Socialism, though. They run a bit into a wall.
There's too many. Just too many. It's like you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah, I don't know. But don't they just need to convince like the district attorneys and the lawyers, or at least have lawyers who go along with the idea, right? They don't even need to believe it. They just need to go along with what's accepted by people higher up, right? And then all of a sudden, anti-Zionism, which is now defined by whatever, ADL, this is just an example, as anti-Semitism, then, you know, you go to prison for it. So, yeah.
Yeah, they can probably try. But the thing is that if everybody does it, it gets hard to convict people. When I was convicted, it took like 1.5 years from I was called by a female cop, of course, in like June to like the autumn next year. So it took like one year and 3 months or something like that. So if everybody does it, it doesn't really work convicting people. It takes a lot of time and so on. So they often prioritize.
Yeah, they go after people who are able to vocalize and able to communicate ideas well and who dare to stand up. You know, those are the ones they go after. And then they put you in the media or they make like a big show out of it. And then it scares all the other people who aren't quite as brave, right? But I'm sure, I mean, if lots of people are doing it, it makes it harder. But they have their sneaky ways, that's for sure.
Yeah. But it's like hate speech laws in Sweden. The application of them has changed a bit the last year since the 7th of October 2023. But before, it was like only old ladies who wrote shit about immigrants on Facebook and National Socialists or like nationalists overall. They were the ones getting convicted.
What are they going against old ladies?
Absolutely. But now we have the first conviction of Holocaust denial in Sweden, like I believe like last week or 2 weeks ago. And it was like two Arabs or two non-whites they didn't act good overall. They like ran around and harassed Swedes, like just doing not nice stuff in public, just acting wild and stuff. And so they took them probably to get like some sympathy from boomers and so on. But now like we have a Jew, Aron Flam, I believe he was suspected of, or they accused him, some people.
Of what? Holocaust?
No, for hate speech, for like, I believe against Palestinians and so on. So they reported him, but I don't believe they got anywhere. Also, like a leftist, a pretty high up leftist, like a South American lady, she like retweeted some picture that was like a bit too anti-Zionist. So it was on the verge of anti-Semitism. She got reported too. But she wasn't convicted.
Was that the picture with the Jewish octopus like hugging the
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Something like that. That's and I believe some other like old leftist man got convicted too. There was also a guy, an Arab who used to speak at Palestinian demonstrations in Sweden, and he held like a speech where he talked about anti-Zionism, but it was like you heard the old frog whistles, the old like you can see some anti-Semitic like
undertones.
Yeah, absolutely. like a guy called Suleiman who held speech on Palestinian demonstrations. He talked about the Apple use people. For example, and that's a reference to the juice emoji and so on. And and he also like talked about 9/11 and so on. And and that like Michael Jackson was killed by the Zionist mafia and so on. stuff like that. But there's like all these conspiracy nuts. I believe on War Strike, Stryker has talked a bit about this, that a lot of these like conspiracy nuts, if you like feed them anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, they get hooked pretty quickly in some cases, and they spread it to other people. And even though they are like a bit crazy, you shouldn't like contrast signal them every time, because they're still an inconvenience to Jews.
Yeah, but they can also be an inconvenience to yourself as well. I mean, I definitely agree.
Yeah, sometimes, but they're more of an inconvenience to Jews because we know what these people are, and we just like in our we know what to expect of people and what people to let in into our circles and so on. But they are, even though they aren't correct every time, they're spreading fun conspiracy theories about Zionists and Jews, and just talking about Jews, even if it's not like 100% correct, just talking about Jews and Zionists is good for us. They don't really like getting the light.
I mean, as long as you keep them at arm's length, because you need to keep on focus, right? You know, it's so easy to get distracted by all this alternative messaging. But yeah, I mean, I would never counter sting. I mean, we have our goals, right? So
yeah, there's no point
spending energy on it. But but stay at arm's length. That's my opinion, at least.
Absolutely. Did you have anything more, Andreas?
Nope. Not at the moment.
Yeah, I had one point, and it's going to read a bit from the article. It says, furthermore, German media houses were owned by Jews. The Social Democratic Party was led by Jews, and the German bankers were in fact Jews. Jews set the agenda in the German nation, and the influence they had was used in many cases to undermine the German nation. But this is of course conspiracy theories, according to Fredrik Ingblad. One of these conspiracy theorists was Winston Churchill, one of the foremost intellectuals of that time, who wrote in an article from 1920, quote, "This movement among the Jews is not new, from the days of Spartacus Weishaupt to those of Karl Marx and down to Trotsky in Russia, Belakun in Hungary, and Rosa Luxemburg in Germany, and Emma Goldman in the United States. This worldwide conspiracy for the overthrow of civilization and for the reconstitution of society on the basis of arrested development, of envious malevolence, and the impossible equality has been steadily growing. It played, as a modern writer, Mrs. Webster, has so ably shown, a definitely recognizable part in the tragedy of the French Revolution. It has been the mainspring of every subversive movement during the 19th century, and now at last this band of extraordinary personalities from the underworld of the great cities of Europe, and so on. But that's a part of Winston Churchill's speech, and I just put it into an AI to like Gemini and just asked if it was real, and it said that it was real, but it said like in the context of the article, Fredrik Weideland put it out of context because Churchill wasn't like, he wasn't hostile to Jews, he liked them, and so on. But I actually got AI to agree that even though people may argue that the quote is taken out of context because Churchill supported Jewish people, that is besides the point, because by today's standard, especially in the post-October 7th era, the quote remains inherently anti-Semitic because it relies on two core tropes. First is essentializing a group. It treats individual Jewish political actors, like he mentioned Trotsky or Luxembourg, not as independent ideologues, but as an expression of a distinct collective Jewish movement or subversive band. And also to the power myth, that it attributes massive, sweeping historical events like the French Revolution or the fall of the Russian Empire to a shadowy, continuous line of specific ethnic coordination. And this is something that Warstreich has talked a lot about, that in a sense, nationalists and Jews often share like a fundamental understanding of the dynamics of identity and power, but they simply operate on opposing sides of the conflict. Meanwhile, all other political players are left fumbling around in the dark. But it was, so this quote is apparently real, but yeah, AI just says that, yeah, it's real and it's anti-Semitic today, but it's just, that's just how they talked in those days and just excused it that way.
How was it out of context? So that's what I'm confused about. Like,
because he liked Jews.
What Churchill said. We're in complete agreement. There was nothing there.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just that he thinks that that is good and we think it's bad. But yeah it's still anti-Semitism. If you talk like that today, it's anti-Semitism because of these like two reasons, essentializing a group and the power myth.
Unless you're a Jew, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Well, or really Jew-friendly.
Yeah.
Winston Churchill was a fat war criminal, so I think he just realized who's the power player in the world. He can still hate them and still want to be on their side because he knows where the wind is blowing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to say Donald Trump is the same, but it's not really true. I think he genuinely loves them.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an odd figure, absolutely. Yes, but he's probably like blackmailed also. Yeah, he's just a bad person overall. Yeah, another point that I had was the one about the racial laws. And yeah, it says in the article, quote, "But there are actually nations today that have racial laws, and the nation that stands out the most is Israel. The Zionist occupation regime in Palestine voted through a racial law as early as 1950 that gives Jews, wherever they are, the right to settle in Israel and automatic citizenship. Furthermore, Israel's Arabic minority are second-class citizens in Israel because Israel is regarded specifically as a Jewish state. There are many cases of Jews and non-Jews not being allowed to marry each other, and Israeli Arabs who are not permitted to buy land in Israel." I also like looked up the racial laws a bit quick with AI and so on, and it gave a pretty funny response. It says that like, yeah, they have racial laws, but like other countries also have racial laws, like, let's see, Greece, Armenia, Germany, and Ireland. And so it said it was okay. And what I believe here is that like Ireland has a lot of like Irish people in diasporas, like in Americas. And Germany probably has some diasporas because, yeah, what happened after the war and so on. So it says it was okay because of that. But yeah, like trying to sanitize this by comparing Israel to countries like Ireland or Germany, it's a massive false equivalence. Because if you like look at the actual scale of global accusation, like which country has been overwhelmingly indicted for systemic racism, demographic engineering, and apartheid over the last decade, it isn't like Greece or Armenia or Germany or Ireland. It's Israel. They are handling it a bit different.
I mean, isn't it completely different? Because like the Germans, I mean, I'm not sure on the laws here, but isn't it like if you you're Germans and you left and you got German blood, you can return. While in Israel, yeah, it's if you got even if you never lived there, you know, you're a Jew, so you belong in this country, right?
Yeah,
aren't they completely different? But I don't know, maybe there's
they are. Yeah, absolutely, they're different, and it's also that Germany also opened up its borders to like every scoundrel alive on the earth.
Yeah,
same as with Sweden. Israel doesn't, but Israel likes European countries being multicultural and Jews like that. So, yeah, it's really a really false, poisonous behavior. I also said that, like, non-Jews technically have pathways to citizenship, and they did the old trope that you can like convert to Judaism and so on. But it's said, like, also very, you know, that it's much more restrictive than European countries. And I was like, your note that non-Jews technically have pathways to citizenship, but you admit that it's much more restrictive, it's that phrasing is a massive understatement. It's just trying to change the perspective. It's Israel is, it's mostly Jews that live in Israel. And there are a bit of Arabs, I believe it's like 10% or 20, something like that. But they live in an apartheid. So you can't just convert to Judaism. It's a really hard process. And so, yeah, it's much more restrictive. And the disparity isn't just restrictive, it's astronomical. Like, an ethnic Jew from anywhere in the world can step off a plane and receive automatic immediate citizenship based purely on lineage. Meanwhile, an indigenous non-Jew born in the region or a non-Jewish spouse faces an intentionally hard, often entirely frozen bureaucratic wall, especially designed to prevent them from altering the demographic balance. Like some specific people who lay down a lot of time on like converting to Judaism, like some specific cases, they can succeed absolutely, but it's so hard that it's not gonna change the demographic balance. But what has Zionists done to like Sweden or Germany? They have altered the demographic balance totally,
yeah,
in a catastrophic way. So it isn't just, yeah.
It's a bit like a poison pill as well, though, isn't it? Like, you know, okay, all Jews have this automatic citizenship, but you know, if public opinion goes too far against Israel, no Jew in the whole world is going to be trusted because you know they have this Trump card in their pocket, right? I don't know. A thought.
yeah, absolutely.
Not only what you mentioned, Lucas, but some from New York that's never even been into the Middle East has a right to some Palestinian's home.
Yeah,
and like Ashkenazi Jews also that get like sunburned after 10 minutes. So yeah, they're like, it's hate speech to say you're gonna have to beep this, but they're like race mixed, like they don't belong anywhere.
No. I don't know if you have you all seen the video with Jacob that's from, I think he was from Brooklyn, where he was explaining how to a Palestinian, like, if I don't steal your home, someone else is going to do it. What can I do about it?
Yeah. That clip. Yeah, it's a classic. Yeah, it's so weird. It's like, according to like some old books and studies, they lived there 2,000 years ago. It's like, according to Jews, Europeans can't like say, yeah, in the 80s we owned all south of Africa, now we're just gonna go there and just kill them all and put up a nation state for whites. That's not allowed, but they can do it. Mm. And South Africa was controlled by whites in the 80s. They say that they lived in Palestine like 2,000 years ago. So,
But I mean, it's not an. Have you heard of the Heavenly Ukraine project? Because there was like this Jewish empire in like a tiny little.
Yeah, the Khazar kingdom.
Yeah, the Khazar kingdom, right?
Yeah.
But now, you know, there's this billionaire who's, you know, thinks that it belongs to Jews and wants to make a mass immigration over there, and there's probably a lot of places in the world where they've been moving about so much, right, completely organically. The whole world belongs to them, maybe, so be careful.
Kind of looks like they're panicking now, trying to find maybe at least have a new reserve home here. Talks about Argentina too, yeah, with the burning down of the forests.
Yeah, so just if they base like belonging and citizenship entirely on a person's bloodline and ethnicity, and then dressing it up as like standard nationality law, that's just like semantic gymnastics. If you go by the like modern liberal international standards of human rights and everything, like a law that functions to maintain the total political supremacy of one ethnic group over another, it's by definition like an institutionalized racial framework. And yeah, it's just a thing that they won't let Europeans do anything close to it. And that they then like spread like weird propaganda in Sweden, for example, where they try to put Arabs against like white people and make us contra-jihadist and just make us focus on Islam and so on, when it's the Jews that let them in and so on. So they're just like foul players, a criminal gang, using dirty tactics.
Yeah, they're playing a game no one's playing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Another thing, I mentioned it before, it's the statement, quote, death to SOG. Yeah, that's illegal in Sweden, but I use it myself in private occasions because I think it's a good term. But that's illegal in Sweden, but like the C stands for Zionists, so that's just a weird thing, I believe, because you can criticize like Zionists in other situations, but you can't say death to SOG. And that's probably because the term came from like the order and so on.
You want to say death to America?
Yeah, you can say death to America. Okay. that's a pretty good alternative.
Yeah,
But he talks a bit about this in article in a good way. I can quote article here. Even if death to SOG is not a slogan I use myself, I still believe it is right to say death to a powerful lobby that manipulates one nation into waging war against another nation for its own interests. It would have been just as wrong if a lobby with such extremely large influence over the world had been Chinese, Swedish, Brazilian, or anything else. And yeah, SOG stands for Zionist Occupied Government. This is just my notes. And yeah, the thing about Zionists are that not only Jews are Zionists, also other people, so the world can be Zionists. It's a political position, not a biological race. But sometimes when you say Zionists, you can mean Jews, and sometimes you cannot mean it. It contains both these elements. They are just really, really desperate when they ban these terms. It's a legal overreach.
Yeah, you have a similar situation in Britain now, where the British police came and said that if demonstrators at those Palestinian marches used the slogan death to the IDF, they will also be arrested now.
Yeah, it's just as weird, if not weirder because the IDF is an army and so on. But yeah.
Makes no sense.
Absolutely. And it, like, it grants the state, and it has like these hate speech laws, it grants the state the power of mind reading. So it allows prosecutors to look past the literal words spoken and to invent an unstated criminal intent based purely on the speaker's background, as they do in Sweden. So if the state, they can just decide that criticizing a political ideology is a proxy for racial hatred, and then any aggressive critique of a foreign lobby could be weaponized and banned, and so on. And yeah, using hyperbolic and aggressive rhetoric is a standard feature of radical political discourse. Like, if you look across the political spectrum, slogans utilizing the phrase death to X are commonly used to demand the total destruction of political systems. So on, people say death to capitalism, death to America, death to whatever. And yeah, Zionists aren't the people in that way. Absolutely. That was my point about SOG, because I think it's a pretty, just using the term occupation government, I think it's very telling, because it describes a lot of how states work in this day and age, especially in the Nordics. Yes, another thing that also comes back to an episode we had before is this quote from the article. Quote, first, Engblad says that when you praise what happened during the Third Reich and Adolf Hitler, then it is incitement to racial hatred. Then he elaborates that what happened was racial hatred, racial persecution, and extermination. And that's just hypocrisy, and it becomes undeniable when you, like, look at the historical record of the state of Israel itself. Sure, you can, like, claim that praising Adolf Hitler is bad because you've listened to the propaganda. Sure, absolutely. But yet some of those critics connected to the state especially fiercely defend a political system in Israel that is that literally elevated unrepentant violent terrorists to the highest echelons of state power. In some episodes back, we talked about Count Folke Bernadotte. So if we look at the facts, in 1948, Bernadotte, a Swedish royalty, backed UN diplomat who had just saved thousands of Jews from the Nazi concentration camps via the white buses. As regular history says, he was brutally assassinated in Jerusalem by the Zionist militant group Lehi, or called like the Stern Gang. And if you look at the perpetrators, the actual shooter, Yeshua Cohen, he was never convicted. Instead, he became a revered figure, a founder of a kibbutz, and an intimate friend, confidant, and personal bodyguard of Israel's founding father and first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion. And even more astronomical is the trajectory of a guy called Yitzhak Shamir, one of the three Stern Gang leaders who actively approved the assassination of Bernadotte. And this guy, Shamir, he wasn't cast out of Israeli society at all. He was absorbed into the Mossad, elected to the Knesset, and eventually served two terms as the prime minister of Israel in the 80s and 90s. So it's so hypocritical to say that if you praise what happened during the Third Reich and Adolf Hitler, then it's incitement to racial hatred. But the same people that don't allow you to criticize Israel or Jews and so on, but they have, like, in their state power, they have, like, state mandated terrorism towards Swedish officials. For example, the Count Folke Bernadotte. So it's like, it's worse to... So you're supposed to cry about, like, Jews being killed in another country that isn't in the Nordics, but you're supposed to shut up about Swedish officials being killed by a terrorist regime called Israel. That's just a weird thing, in my opinion. Yeah, I also want to read the finishing statement from the article. I think that one is pretty telling, and because I read the introductory statement. Yeah, the article ends in this way. And then two questions arise. One, should it, in that case, be incitement to racial hatred to praise Israel, wave the Israeli flag, and call Ariel Sharon a folk hero? Two, if we now base this on Engblad's unobjective argumentum ad populum, argumentation, this would be proof that those who praise Israel commit incitement to racial hatred for a likely majority of people in relatively Israel-critical Sweden, probably think of precisely racial persecution, colonialism, apartheid, and genocide when they hear the word Israel. And what those people think should in that case be given weight in a court of law. I have tried here today to explain what we actually stand for, how absurd these charges are, and how dangerous they also are for a constitutional state. If you are now going to convict me for a general statement that Hitler was a folk hero, a general statement that a Zionist occupation regime or a racist ideology, according to the UN, ought to be smashed, or the other point that involved the oppression of opinion, inequality before the law, and which restrict a constitutionally protected ideology in Sweden, then please do not write in the verdict that there is no acceptable reason in a constitutional state to acquit. Admit instead that Sweden is a totalitarian state where oppression of opinion prevails and where Swedish courts throw people in prison, not because of crimes, but solely because of their political opinions. Stand by that in that case and do not abuse the word constitutional state. Thank you for your time. That's the ending. That's most of what I have. Do you guys have anything to add?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really important that, you know, people can, you know, it might seem hopeless, but, you know, we can win in court. We have won court and pushed back on the system. You know, it's still it's still a tool. So, you know, a lot of praise to anyone who can, you know, stand up in front of a jury and you know, speak the truth, right? It was nice to hear, and it was a good speech. I liked it. It was very interesting. And you still got, he didn't get it overturned, right? That's what you told Tahi, right?
Yeah. I believe we won some cases, but this one we lost because those things are still illegal. Yeah, absolutely. I really recommend the article. It's only a 30-minute read, and Veideland's speech, you can summarize it into three pillars, like the legal argument, like the state is overreaching and banning IDs by proxy, and the historical argument that National Socialism is to be defined by National Socialists as a welfare ideology and like community of the people, Volksgemeinschaft, and so on. And also the comparative argument, pointing out that the violence or racial laws of democracies. And he talks about other democracies also, how the US has acted and other democracies and so on. And there's also some like quotes by Dr. Walter Gross in it, the thing about Churchill that we talked about, and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a good article. Does anyone have anything more to add? Then I feel that I'm pretty finished with.
Unlike the Jews, we don't want to oppress anyone. We don't need like. We're not gonna found a national socialist state in, say, like China, and make Chinese people second class citizens in their country. We have our countries, and we want to live separate but peacefully.
Yeah, exactly.
But the Jews have no such intentions.
No.
And as usual, they're just projecting their own shit on us.
Yeah, always.
Yeah, but I also like the speech. It was a really good summary.
Yeah, and it summarizes so much about the ideology. For just a 30-minute read, you get a lot of like good ideology, and it's before its time. Also, this was written in 2015, and some may say like, yeah, it's only like 11 years ago, but in this post October 7th world, and like the arguments on Twitter, and we have like grifters and fake nationalists and so on, with all this like shit going around, this article is like, is really basic National Socialist ideology and really good talking points. And just if you read it 2026 in this day and age, especially if you're on the internet a lot and read stuff by a National Socialist, this article is really a good complement, and it really gives you a basic ability to like navigate yourself in the political world.
This was before your, because it was Lucas who brought up this topic this week. It was before your time in the resistance movement, right? Where did you hear this article?
Yeah, absolutely. It was posted on Nordfront 2015, and that was when Nordfront was like, it was the official website of the Nordic resistance movement. Now it's completely separate. It's just a National Socialist news website. But it's from that time. But he talks a bit about Nordfront in the article, and yeah, and that's through that context that Nordfront is a part of the resistance movement back then, but also like as just a National Socialist news page in some way. Yeah.
Okay.
If anyone doesn't have anything more to add, I think we can wrap up this episode. We've talked for like an hour at least.
Well, maybe the last thing, like, it seems like there's a lot of, you know, we talked a bit about overreach, Jewish overreach, but they've been implementing hate speech laws for, you know, 50 years now or 100 years now, right? They just keep going. Do you see, and this is something I've been thinking about as well, because Thomas Massie just lost his race. He was a big critic of the Israeli lobby in America, and they pulled out resources that, you know, I don't think ever has been seen in a congressional race before in America. You know, is there going to be pushback there? What kind of forms of pushback do we see? That's what I'm a bit interested. What should be looking for? You know, when have they gone too far? Right? Because it may seem a bit like they can do anything to the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. It's for the future to tell, really. In some cases, you can like predict the future, but a lot of things that people thought would happen past haven't really happened the way we wanted it to happen. But he was also pretty close, Massie. Wasn't like 45% or something, 44. Just parliamentarism is how it's created. The Zionists have more money. They have the system. So I'm not like shocked in any way that it happened that way. Yeah, you can be happy for how far he got and just keep on the struggle. As I'm more of an, I do some parliamentarism, but mostly I like regular activism and just organizations. I believe that's a pretty good way. Parliamentarism has its positive in some ways, like not getting banned, getting more legitimacy and so on. Organizations as a whole, that's what I like.
Okay,
we can wrap up the show there. This will hopefully be released in the end of May or in the beginning of June, and we'll be back in a month. We don't really know what we're going to talk about. Maybe something more historical and not so political. I don't know. We've done like 3 political shows in a row now with Knut Sense, 2 pamphlets and this one. But we'll see what interests us. That will be it. Have a good time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, guys. Good talk.